This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The death toll from the deadly COVID-19 virus has now climbed to more than 228,000 globally. The number of infections is more than 3.2 million. In the U.S., there are nearly 62,000 deaths and more than a million infections. The number of people who have recovered from the virus globally is more than a million. U.S. President Donald Trump says the federal government's coronavirus social distancing guidelines will be fading out when they expire Thursday and states pivot to reopening. The administration says the guidance issued 45 days ago has been incorporated into recommendations given to states on how they can begin the process of gradually reopening their economies. Meanwhile, the president's son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner describes the administration's response to the pandemic as a great success story and predicts that by July, the country will be rocking again. Scientists have announced the first effective treatment against the coronavirus, an experimental drug that can speed the recovery of COVID-19 patients, and a major medical advance that comes as the economic gloom caused by the scourge deepens in the U.S. and Europe. The U.S. government says it's working to make the medication available to patients as quickly as possible. The response from the Federal Bureau of Prisons to the growing coronavirus crisis has raised alarm among advocates and lawmakers about whether the agency is doing enough to ensure the safety of the nearly 150,000 inmates serving time in federal facilities. And even though officials have stressed infection and death rates inside prisons are lower compared to outside, new figures provided by the Bureau of Prisons showed that of 2,700 tests system-wide, 2,000 have come back positive, strongly suggesting there are far more COVID-19 cases. This is VOA News. The Navy has decided to take a wider and deeper look at circumstances surrounding the spread of the coronavirus aboard the aircraft carrier USS Theodore Roosevelt, and that move suggests more scrutiny of the Navy's chain of command in the Pacific. The new investigation effectively delays a decision on whether to reinstate the ship's commander. Captain Brett Crozier was fired after pleading for more urgent protection of his crew. Word of the new inquiry comes from the acting Navy Secretary James McPherson. He says an initial inquiry was insufficient and that he had unanswered questions that can only be answered by a deeper review. Labor Party leader Keir Starmer said Wednesday that the United Kingdom's COVID-19 death toll is probably higher than the more than 27,000 reported, making it one of the worst hit countries in Europe. Starmer continues to question the government's response to the outbreak. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's government is facing growing criticism for its response to the outbreak, and as the death toll continues to rise. While the government's chief scientific advisor said last month that keeping the death toll below 20,000 would be a good outcome, the hospital death toll passed that grim milestone last week. Broader data published on Tuesday showed fatalities topped 24,000 9 days ago, but Starmer said his calculation showed more than 27,000 had died. Starmer appears to have added the latest hospital death toll to the most recent English care home death toll, and the non-hospital COVID-19 death tolls in Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's fiancée, Carrie Simmons, gave birth to a healthy baby boy at a London hospital Wednesday, slightly earlier than expected. The delivery at the London hospital, the 32-year-old had previously said her baby was due in early summer. It was unclear if Johnson would take paternity leave, given the government is facing the worst health crisis since the 1918 influenza outbreak, and Johnson just returned to work after recovering from the virus. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said Wednesday that she received a message from Queen Elizabeth, who was eager to touch base and see how the country was faring as it emerges from its lockdown. New Zealand was under a strict lockdown that saw offices, schools, malls, restaurants, playgrounds and other public areas shut for more than a month. The lockdown was lifted Tuesday. Ardern had ridden a wave of popular support in the country for its early and aggressive policy of almost total isolation. And according to Reuters, more evidence has emerged that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is residing in a luxury villa of his coastal resort. It had been monitoring his...
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 30th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. A Uganda court orders members of parliament to return coronavirus money.
Members of parliament no longer have any choice but to return this money to public accounts. This is what should have been done in parliament.
Liberia's chief prosecutor threatens to shut down media institutions that publish fake coronavirus news. Malawi's president announces no COVID-19 measures. The African Centers for Disease Control says African countries need to do more COVID-19 testing. And Lesotho's Senate passes a resolution limiting the powers of Mbatha Prime Minister Thomas Thabane.
What this passing of the amendment means is that it is no longer going to be easy for the Prime Minister to advise His Majesty King to dissolve Parliament whenever he wants.
Malelentwa Lepsa is the deputy leader of Lesotho's opposition Democratic Congress Party. And the impact of the coronavirus on May Day celebrations tomorrow, Friday. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Court in Uganda has ordered members of parliament to return money they earlier allocated for themselves, apparently to help in the fight against the spread of the coronavirus disease. Activists welcome the court ruling, saying it will set a good precedent for separation of powers of governors. Mugumi Davis Rakiringi reports from Kampala.
Parliamentarian Gerard Karuhanga says he's pleased with the High Court ruling instructing fellow legislators to refund the money.
Members of Parliament no longer have any choice but to return this money to public accounts. This is what should have been done in Parliament. We don't account for money. We oversee the accountability of public money. If a debate had been allowed in Parliament, this would have been resolved in Parliament. So, members, I hope those who were planning to have feasts and picnics and probably take their boyfriends or girlfriends out after COVID, sorry.
Last week, Karuhanga and fellow legislator Jonathan Odor went to court to challenge the allocation of 10 billion Uganda shillings or at least $2.6 million, saying the parliament breached rules of procedure. Each parliamentarian was to receive 20 million Uganda shillings or about $5,000. Xavier Ejoy, who heads NGO Action Aid Uganda, applauded the court ruling.
It's in the political interest, first of all, of the MPs to ensure that they are actually doing things in line with what the Ugandan citizens who elected them to that house expect of them. So I think for me that is key, that we should not just wait for a court to pronounce itself. Yes, that helps us with the principle of balances, checks and balances between the three arms of government. However, I think that parliament needs to be put to order.
Sise Kagaba, the executive director of the Anti-Corruption Coalition Uganda, agrees. She says legislators should stop profiting from COVID-19.
There are quite a number of MPs who have come out and said that they've already used this money. And we need to ensure that much as they use that money has to be refunded. That's not the court ruling will actually make meaning. And I think it will actually be a lesson to members of parliament to actually stop thinking that whenever there's a crisis, they have to enrich themselves.
In his address to the nation this Tuesday, Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni also condemned the legislators' actions, saying it is morally reprehensible to give themselves money for personal use during the time of crisis. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakadinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Malawi's president has proposed new safety measures against the coronavirus, which has infected 36 people so far in Malawi and caused three deaths. President Peter Mutharika is offering cash payments to the poor to help them survive a proposed lockdown and to persuade vendors to close shops. But vendors who protested plans for the lockdown 2 weeks ago say the payments will be too small. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
In a revised national address, President Peter Mutharika said the government will make the cash payments to support Malawians who normally depend on the markets for their livelihood. He said the government will target a minimum of 172,000 households, representing an estimated 35% of the urban population.
Each identified household will be paid electronically through mobile payments, 35,000 kwacha per month, and the amount is based on the prevailing government minimum wage rate.
The payments are equivalent to about $50 per month and would last for 6 months. The proposal is in response to demands from vendors and rights activists who 2 weeks ago protested the government's proposed 21-day lockdown. The lockdown never went into effect following the street protests and an injunction by the nation's high court. Chance Widon is the chairperson at Ndiland Market in Blanta. He told VOA by telephone that the proposed payments are too small. He says we cannot expect the government to give each one of us what we earn per day, but he adds the amount announced is too small to sustain us for 21 days. It would have been better if they increased payments to 50,000 kwacha. We can be sourcing the additional amount on our own. Bechani Cheleni, a lecturer in economics at the University of Malawi, says expanded testing would be a better solution to the crisis the country is facing. He spoke to VOA by telephone.
In fact, universal testing would be the best, that everyone should be tested. Where people have been tested and they have been found to be positive with the virus, then they should be quarantined somewhere. Because if we do a universal testing, then everyone is, a lot of people are going to be quarantined. We may not even need a lockdown.
The president said registration for the payments would begin next month. There has been no word on when the payments would start and whether the markets in the major cities may close down. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Liberia's chief prosecutor, Councillor Sema Sirenian Cephas, has threatened to shut down media institutions that publish fake news about the coronavirus. He also threatens to seize their equipment. The warnings follow rumors that President George Weah might have tested positive for the virus. This after a number of senior government officials tested positive this week. The Minister of State for Presidential Affairs has debunked the rumors about the president. Councillor Cephas says Liberia is under a state of emergency and that all freedoms, including freedom of speech and press, have been suspended.
I refer to fake speech or fake news as an attempt on the part of any media institution to spread misinformation about events happening in Liberia. As you may know, pursuant to Article 86 of the 1986 Constitution, the President, in consultation with the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the President pro tempore of the Liberian Senate, declared and proclaimed the state of emergency. And acting pursuant to that Constitution, the President may, under the Constitution, suspend certain basic fundamental rights. While the government has been able to exercise some degree of tolerance toward free speech, the government is not in the position to condone or entertain anybody spreading lies and misinformation. We will not allow fake news masked under the pretext of free speech to be used to defeat the effort of the government. We did not threaten the free press. We threatened free lies and fake news.
You understand the law very well, so instead of threatening to shut down the media, why don't you just take them to court and let the judiciary handle that?
Certainly this is a state of emergency. We will not, because we have exclusive constitutional power pursuant to Article 86 to act, and certain basic rights having been suspended, we will not follow through the normal constitutional process of going through here, there, because this is a state of emergency. Unless in the event where somebody is arrested, then the writ of habeas corpus will apply. But in the instant case, there will be no arrest. If you engage in the spread of fake news, we're coming for your transmission or transmitter, whatever it is, your equipment, so that you can go on and spread your fake news.
Your warning came 24 hours or so after there were rumors that President George Weah might have tested positive for the coronavirus. Do you have any idea where this rumors is coming from? And did the president test positive?
You know, I'm a lawyer. I'm a prosecutor, chief prosecutor of the Republic. I have no training or formal training whatsoever as a health practitioner. Certainly, I would not be able to speak to that. But I want to send a clear warning that it is sad in our country for people to be giving misinformation about a sovereign head. The sovereign head of state is the father of the nation. If he is not well, he knows he will go to hospital. So it's not my business as chief prosecutor of the Republic to engage in gossip as to whether or not he's well here and there. I have said anyone spreading fake news will have himself to blame. Because during a state of emergency, certain basic fundamental rights are suspended. And among them is a question of free speech. What the government has done is that the government has been tolerant to allow free speech to go on, but will not allow free lies. And in the midst of free lies, they now start producing fake news to intimidate and harass peaceful citizens. This is absolutely unacceptable, and I consider it utterly reprehensible. And we must act as a government and ensure that the weaker citizens in this republic are protected. You can't feed on the weakness of our people or on the tears of our people. Some of those who have contracted COVID-19 are some of our best citizens. They are in difficult circumstances. All we can do is to pray with them, with they and their families, so that they can recover and resume their responsibility to the state. I think that is very much important than to spread lies and disinformation about things that are not verified by medical practitioners.
That was Liberia's Chief Prosecutor, Councillor Sima Serenia Cephas, speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 30th. The director of the African Centers for Disease Control says African countries need to conduct 10 million COVID-19 tests in the next few months, but so far have only conducted 600,000. Dr. John Nkengasong says Africa has relied on test kits from Germany and China and is now looking for other suppliers. Virgisim Pantinkin files this report.
Africa's top doctor warned Tuesday that the continent faces a major testing shortage in the fight against COVID-19.
One of the greatest challenges we have in our response strategy for this pandemic on the continent of Africa is testing. We are very low, with less than 600,000 tests on the continent, which I believe is too minimal for now.
Dr. John Nkengasong, director of the African Centers for Disease Control, said the hardest hit countries are still testing far short of what they need.
Algeria is testing about 105 tests per million. Morocco, about 455 tests per million. Egypt, about 560 tests per million. And South Africa, about 2,000 tests per million. I think we need to ramp that up to scale.
Nkengasong spoke at a virtual panel organized by the Washington-based policy think tank, the Atlantic Council. The veteran virologist said that to ramp up testing, the African CDC and the African Union have launched a partnership to accelerate COVID-19 testing on the continent. He said their goal is to roll out 1 million more tests in Africa in the next 5 weeks and 10 million tests in the next 3 to 4 months. But that means getting millions more COVID-19 tests.
We've ordered 1 million tests from a company in Germany, which has been supplying us the tests since the beginning of this outbreak. And it's the same company that has been producing tests for WHO as well. So we have a common supplier there.
But with the whole world in need of tests, that company can't keep up with demand, Nkengasong said.
The second source of tests that the continent has received massive support is through the Jack Ma Foundation donation, which in the last 4 weeks or so, they were able to distribute to the continent 1 million tests. And today, another shipment of 500,000 tests will be coming from the Jack Ma Foundation in a bundle that will include the extraction reagents, the test itself, and the swabs. So I think that is also going to be a huge relief for the continent.
Nkengasong said Africa's CDC is also looking for commercial manufacturers as a third source of test kits. He mentioned U.S. companies Cepheid, Abbott, and Roche, who already work with Africa's CDC to test for tuberculosis, HIV, and malaria.
The Africa CDC is in discussions with the leadership of Cepheid to understand how we can provide us direct support, because the point of care test that has been developed by that company will be a game changer if large amounts were to be available for us to scale up the testing, especially in the remote areas, the more vulnerable areas like the slum cities and around the capital cities.
But Nkengasong warns that having enough test kits is just one step. He said tests must be targeted, noting that some African countries are testing hundreds of people, but only finding a handful of infections despite the virus spreading in the community.
You really have to find the cases as much as possible, isolate them, do the contact tracing, the basic things, so that we tilt the balance against the 3 million deaths that are projected on the continent.
For Africa, the race to test fast and test smart is on. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Washington.
The Lesotho Senate this week passed a resolution limiting the powers of Mbatho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane to dissolve parliament and call for new elections. Prime Minister Thabane has been under increasing pressure by some forces within the ruling All Basotho Convention ABC party to resign following the murder of his estranged wife, for which he and his current wife are said to be implicated. Molalentwa Lepsa is the deputy leader of Lesotho's opposition Democratic Congress Party. He says it will no longer be easy for the prime minister to dissolve parliament.
What this passing of the amendment means is that it is no longer going to be easy for the prime minister to advise His Majesty King to dissolve parliament whenever he wants. The parliament now will have to complete its term, 5-year term. That is the first point. Secondly, the amendment actually says for the prime minister to advise the king to dissolve parliament before the end of the term, that prime minister should put the question to the parliament and he should obtain 2/3 of the votes in the parliament for him to go and advise the king. If he doesn't obtain 2/3, then he shouldn't do it. The new government will be formed in the parliament.
But under Lesotho's constitution, my understanding is it is only the king who has the authority to remove the prime minister.
No, according to our constitution, it is the National Assembly, the parliament of Lesotho, that has the authority to remove the prime minister from office through vote of no confidence. If his party's members cross the floor to join maybe opposition benches and they leave him with the numbers below 61, he has lost his position in that way. If they do that, you don't even have to call for a vote of no confidence. The speaker will go and report to His Majesty King that the complexion of the House, the National Assembly, has changed. And here are the new figures. One, opposition seems to have these numbers. Government seems to have these numbers. And if opposition is able to get more than 61, government will be less than 51. Therefore, opposition automatically will come government.
Is there currently a vote of no confidence in Prime Minister Thomas Thabane in the parliament?
Yes, indeed. There is a vote of no confidence in the prime minister. It is pending in the National Assembly. In fact, it was submitted to the Speaker, I think, a week or two before the reading of the budget somewhere in February. So now that the amendment has passed through the Senate, a lot of things will happen. And all those will be meant to remove the Prime Minister from the office.
Can the King reject the resolution? And what happens then?
No, at this stage, the king won't reject the resolution or the amendment. His is only to put a signature, because in a way, it's advised by the parliament in this case.
Molalentwa Lepsa is the deputy leader of Lesotho's opposition Democratic Congress Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. Tomorrow, Friday, is May 1st, International Workers' Day, which is normally marked by demonstrations in cities around the world calling for better working conditions. But this year, the lockdown in many countries means the protesters will be forced to stay at home. As Henry Richwell reports from London, there are new warnings that the coronavirus is wreaking havoc on the global economy.
Hundreds lined up to receive emergency government aid in Brazil's Rio de Janeiro this week as the economic crisis destroys businesses and jobs. Job seeker Ivanilson Ulysses says we don't even fear the coronavirus that kills, but hunger is very cruel. The UN's International Labour Organization warns that half of all workers worldwide, amounting to 1.5 billion people, are in danger of having their livelihoods destroyed by the coronavirus pandemic. That stark prediction comes on the eve of International Workers' Day, May 1st. Sharon Burrow, General Secretary of the International Trade Union Confederation, says this year we should be thankful for the workers who are putting their lives on the line.
Those courageous workers in health who go to work every day along with others in care settings and risk their health and safety and that of their families to save lives. But there are others who make themselves available in services, in transport, in our supermarkets.
Burrow says many of those key workers feel insecure in their jobs.
This virus has exposed the fragility of our world. When you consider that 60% of the global workforce work informally, no rights, no minimum wages, no social protection, no rule of law to deal with grievance, that's simply an economic risk, as well as a social devastation that has to be undone.
May Day is usually marked by anti-capitalist protests. This year, with hundreds of countries in lockdown, demonstrations will likely be absent. Burrow says the focus should be on the world that will emerge after the pandemic.
We must rebuild a more equal world that guarantees democratic rights and freedoms, that allows for more equal development.
Before that can happen, millions of people face a struggle to get through the coming economic crisis. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And that's it for this Thursday, April 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you will have a very good day.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
How will the coronavirus pandemic affect Russian President Vladimir Putin's plan to stay in power beyond 2024, the end of his current term? Two leading experts on Russia and U.S.-Russian relations talk with host Carol Castiel about how the pandemic is upending President Putin's domestic and international political aspirations. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Encounter on The Voice of America.
Make a difference by honoring ordinary people doing extraordinary things to help one another. VOA encourages you to tell us about everyday people who have shown leadership in your communities during the coronavirus crisis. Submit your nominations to VOA Leaders at voanews.com. Send us your name, phone number, and email, and a VOA reporter will contact you. We're all in this together.